Welcome to Voice Rising with Kara Johnstad. Enjoy weekly conversations with leading luminaries, pioneering visionaries, singers, poets, musicians, and sound healers as we explore the profound role our voice plays on the path to self-realization and global enlightenment. The internationally acclaimed singer, composer, author, healer, recording artist, voice expert, creator of Voice Your Essence, and founder of the School of Voice, Kara Johnstad, uses her extraordinary spiritual gifts to empower others. Everything in this world vibrates. Everything has a frequency. A pioneer in the field of voice work and transformational songwriting. Her breakthrough methods are helping thousands of people worldwide fine-tune their body-mind-spirit system and unlock the energetic frequencies of limitless creativity, health, and abundance. Share your voice, ask your questions, join in the conversation. Receive life-changing, positive transformation and rise together to create a sound world. And here's your host, Kara Johnstad.
Hello, everybody. A very warm welcome. Today we are exploring how we as a humanity can fine-tune our body-mind-spirit system and heal through sound consciousness. And with us live in studio is a musician and storyteller, Gary Strautsus. Gary Strautsus performs world flute music drawn from many traditional cultures and creates odysseys of sound with the world of nature. As a flute artist and storyteller, Gary Strautsus evokes a spirit of place and captures the voices of the land through his music. His work includes internationally acclaimed recordings of sacred sites and using the unique acoustics and history of each great space as a starting point for his musical exploration. I warmly welcome you, Gary, to the Voice Rising Show.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you here this early morning on the west coast of the United States of America in Seattle, Washington.
Yeah, that's a lovely place to be. And thank you so much for waking up with the sun. I think the sun and you have risen, right?
One with the sun here this morning. We're going up together.
Yeah, isn't that fantastic? So you play the flute, or you are famous for this amazing instrument, and the sounds of the flute, they unlock the gate into our subconscious mind. And so if we stepped into your childhood, Gary, would we find you immersed in music?
Well, that's a great question. My mother said I used to hum all the time and bounce up and down in the crib. But to be real honest with you, as a young person, I was attracted to melodies that had come from, you know, being my age. I grew up with the great music from the British Isles, with the early music from the great bands that had come. Now, you know, of course, the Beatles, but just all that music. I think that was the first. Someone asked me, I said, well, where'd you get into what you're doing? I said, well, I first heard melodies from English folk music, and it captured my imagination. And of course, I discovered American jazz, like a lot of us here in the States. I explored the music of sacred Afro-Cuban music because of my friends that had come as young children from Cuba after Castro took over the island. And then I found the American Indian music and spirit and culture of that. And, you know, really the bulk of my work, people got to know me through working with American Indian culture and music. And then, of course, I was always attached to the natural rhythms of the universe. A great South African jazz pianist, Abdullah Ibrahim, told me that it's all about the natural rhythms of the universe. And that always stuck with me, and so it's been a kind of, you know, it's been a lot of different music, but really the foundation early, to be honest with you, would have been the folk music from the British Isles, and then it carried through.
Oh, that's beautiful.
That's a lot right there. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that is the path of many, many people that become musicians. We have the folk melodies, we have the jazz, some people listen to classical music. It's like a river, mm-hmm. right? And it's all feeding us. And when you started listening to this music and the first time you started, I'm assuming, studying or performing, was flute your very first instrument that you were playing?
Well, I kind of tried the guitar, but it hurt my fingers and I couldn't stay. I love the acoustic guitar. Who doesn't? It's, you know, it's such an mm-hmm. old, there's mm-hmm. so many variations of a string instrument. But again, to, you know, you retrace your roots. You know, I was telling you earlier that now that I'm 65 years old this year, I said to myself, well, how really did you come to the music? And, you know, some people have, I never realized, you know, maybe some learning disabilities with Western music forms, like learning how to really read music really well or understanding mm-hmm. harmony. And I struggled with that, and so I developed an ear, you know, an ear training. And I, mm-hmm. that's how when I heard melodies, they kind of stuck in my head. So I had to work, I think, a lot harder early on than people that went to formal training. And it was just really something I never really thought about, but I wanted to be part of the music. But right. when you're working with jazz and classical music, you know, it's ensemble music, and there's forms and rules and regulations. And I kind of, yeah. I broke from all that, and I kind of developed, I think, a flute sound on a lot of different flutes that I could call my own. And like Miles Davis said, it takes a long time to sound like yourself. And I always remember that. And I just think that those learning disabilities, in a funny way, now that I retrace myself, I mm-hmm. think that might have helped me record flute music that, oh, well, that guy isn't really a classical sound. Oh, it's kind of, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm trying to say here this early morning, I found a voice maybe by accident from the path I took.
Well, I think, you know, I think, Gary, what you're saying is very precious, because I think that there are a lot of people that feel drawn to sing or to play an instrument, and they, you know, you're not the only one who has struggled with you know, is it a Mixolydian or is it a, you know, D minor 7-9,
yeah, really
sharp 11, or, of course.
Yeah, it was tough on yeah. me. It was really because it put yeah. pressure on you. Because
right.
the guys would say, well, you know, you don't really have the science. You know, a lot of the older jazz guys I knew used to tell me, you know, be careful of the science of jazz. Be very careful. Stay with the roots of the African melodies. You keep doing what you're
right.
doing, because it bothered me when I was young, because, oh, Gary, I couldn't stay up with the music was moving too fast. And
right.
and when I found the American Indian melodies that were so haunting and simple, like little chants, I seemed to attract to the concept of playing chants on flute.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a wonderful story, because I think that many people, they stop with their passion for music because they feel judged or they feel that they're not enough. And the truth is, there are many people in this world creating beautiful music that have not studied all the very complex harmonics of jazz. And so
yeah,
what
when
you're
you get
doing
locked
is...
in.
Right. And so to pave that way for all of us to reconnect with those beautiful melodies and the folkloric melodies and the Native American melodies, the medicine songs, it's a great gift. I mean, that's probably the, you know, the sweet, well, the diamond that was maybe made through all that pressure of learning all those different scales, right? You found your true voice. Gary, when did you receive your first flute? How did it feel? Because you shifted somewhere from the guitar and all these complex harmonics to really feeling at home and coming home to the flute. So
I have to tell you the truth, I guess, because that's what you're supposed to do.
Tell me the truth.
I was in college, young, enamored again with this mythical, pastoral, madrigal, velvet green, these English little dancing puppets that are playing all this music that I remember. I didn't understand the foundation of traditional European music. I just said, well, wait a minute, why is that kind of prancing along? Why do I like that? So I'm in the first row of a concert with a crazy guy standing on one leg with wild hair and his eyes are popping out of his head, and I'm 5 feet away from this iconic young figure by the name of Ian Anderson from the great band Jethro Tull, and I'm going, why is this guy blowing on this flute and snorting and running around, and what is going on up there? And it was so amazing, because here I am 19 years old and there's 10,000 people, but I'm in the first row and this stuff is coming off the stage. So the next day I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to buy a silver concert flute for $35 at a pawn shop, and I'm going to lock myself in the dorm room and I'm going to listen to this flute music by Traffic, Moody Blues, King Crimson, Genesis, Jethro Tull. And I'm going to try to teach myself how to play the silver flute note by note by myself. And I sat there and agonized trying to go, and I'm going, what am I doing? And I never went to class for the whole semester, and the whole thing just fell apart right from there in that dorm room in 1973.
Wow. So you didn't go to class, but you continued with your passion for flute. You managed it. Those are really hard songs. Those are hard songs to learn. Most people start with a simple, Bach piece or something. Right? You started with the jazz.
No musical training, only developing, remember what I said earlier? Developing an ear, but I think the flute knew. Some of the Hopi Indian people told me last month I was up at, I'm working on a preservation project, said the flute, their flute, the nose, ear, and cat. And like, I had no dreams of making a record or finding out about jazz masters or Cuban. I didn't know anything about the North American Indian. I just knew about this Englishy kind of Hobbit music that it is, but that's what they did to you. They captured your, it was like Lord of the Rings before Lord of the Rings, right? They captured young American people like me. They captured your imagination where you kind of thought, in the Age of Camelot, Merlin casts a spell. Right. That's what they did to you. That's what they did. And it never went away really in your heart. I walked away from that music for over 30 years. Yeah. But guess what's happened just in the last 3 or 4 years? I got the guys together. No, we're playing all the music rearranged our way. It's got nothing to do with it's a different type of meditative soundscape. But see, it never left you, the inside of you.
Well, the Celtic tradition is also very ancient and beautiful, right? So,
but I can't play it, because I talked to Matt Malloy from the Chieftains, and I said, how do you do that with an embouchure? And what are you guys doing? I said, are you just sitting around drinking the pints? I mean, how do you do that? He says, well, I forgot he said. He goes, you have to have a need, and it has to be ingrained in you. You have to there's just their way. And yes, it's sad, and it parallels a lot of the North American Indian music. It's, people say, oh, it's happy, but it's also sad, and like, what happened to you people? Well, yeah, there's a lot of, it's just the music, you know, just has a lot of history in it.
Yeah, it does. So when did you decide, Gary, to turn that passion, that exploration,
well,
into your life's work?
I was listening, you know, I was mesmerized by the whole, you know, they called it prog rock, right? The whole progressive thing. Then
right.
Something happened. The great jazz flute players, Rawson, Roland Kirk, Yusuf Lateef, Paul Horn, Herbie Mann, all of a sudden I started hearing Miles Davis, John Coltrane. I said, well, this is a whole lot hipper, but I didn't understand how jazz worked, but it captured my imagination at the tail end of college. And then I went on a whole journey of trying to learn how to play jazz flute, which is not an easy road to go. So
right.
I ended up having my own little group and meeting a lot of the great jazz people that are no longer with us, because I was the kind of guy that would, I'd go to the club and I'd hang around and I'd try to meet people and ask questions. I was like a pest, right? They said Bob Dylan was like that. He kept bothering everybody. They just didn't. I go, here he is again. He's just bugging everybody, you know? And so I was just bugging everybody. And they kind of took, not pity on me, but they liked my insane passion about it. And they would share stories. And you're right there again, just like the front row of Jethro Tull. There you are in the club. You're no more than 5 feet away from McCoy Tyner and all these great masters. And it just blew the lid off everything. And that's what happened to me. But there's more, but that's the jazz
bug
scene.
Bit you.
Well,
okay,
yeah, Charles
Gary.
Lloyd is a, yeah. It bit me.
Now let's take a little station break, and then we're going to come back and deepen that conversation of jazz and, of course, sound consciousness.
Edge of Conscious Radio, Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Connect at omtimes.com. Om Times, creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Conflict comes in many forms and often triggers a fight or flight response. Some of us gravitate toward conflict, while many will stop at little to nothing to avoid it. Unfortunately, what we resist will persist, which often forces us to face our fear and deal with it head on. Join me during my show, Conflict Rising, as I discuss the important role of conflict with leaders who have moved through it successfully. Tune in Thursdays at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Remember, it's always darkest before the dawn.
With happy clients all over the world, Kara Johnstad knows that your voice is the missing link to more authenticity, abundance, creativity, and health. An internationally acclaimed voice expert, Kara's breakthrough methods have helped thousands of people successfully heal their voice wounds and extinguish the story of self-doubt and shyness forever. Join in group trainings, attend online sessions, schedule one-on-one time, and invite Kara to work with your organization and community. Get started today go to www.carajohnstad.com and receive a special guided meditation designed to fine-tune your inner voice and welcome you on the voice journey.
Why was the basketball court all wet? Because the players kept dribbling on it.
The dad joke. Corny, groan-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
What did the buffalo say when he dropped his son off for school?
Bye, son.
So take a moment to make your kid laugh, because dad jokes rule. Make your kid laugh today. Go to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
So I'm Cara Johnstead. You're at Voice Rising, and I am in studio with the wonderful flute player and storyteller Gary Strautzus. And we were diving deeply into, Gary, your journey of how you came to the flute and the jazz sessions and, the folk music that you fell in love with. And now, of course, your path really preserving a lot of the melodies from the Native American community. And so let's continue on with that jazz path. I believe that one of your mentors and jazz flutist, Paul Horn, who in the 60s, he went and journeyed to India, and he did an album where he played inside the Taj Mahal. He also did another album where he played inside the pyramids, right? And he used these sacred spaces to really evoke the mystery of the flute. You just released Reflections of the Taj Mahal. I want to share with the audience, it's a very beautiful album that I personally find meditative, but as also a songwriter, somebody who can't really write songs with any straight rhythm behind me or straight lyrics, it's really a gift to find beautiful albums that are full of inspiration and have a lot of soul, but still leave space for us to travel also together with you. So that's, you know, how I have been listening into your music. And I'd like to play a track off the Taj Mahal album entitled Agra. Can you share with us a bit more about the Taj Mahal project and why you chose to bring out this album?
Well, first, thank you, because I feel through my career that this project that I wanted to honor Paul before he passed away. I wanted to do something for him because a lot of people forgot what a great composer his own right, had his own jazz music in the late 50s and early 60s, found a different voice in the Taj Mahal. It's how that happened. He called it a cosmic accident. There's actually an interview at the end of that recording that I was honored to have one of the last, I think, interviews with Paul, just about musing and music. And he said, well, make sure you do something and let him hear your soul, Gary. Don't just transcribe and try to copy the, you know, the notes that I played that day in the Taj Mahal by accident in April 1968, and created a genre, I guess, that people call New Age music. He didn't like the fact that he was he didn't want to be the grandfather of New Age music. He was always a jazz person. And he was always harmonically very advanced, and that's why a lot of his music in the meditative world, where more people got to know him, he was still using, you know, his background in that music. So I just went to the studio with the different flutes, the Hopi replicated rim flute, the alto flute, the bass flute, and I decided to take flight. And the one song you're going to play actually is in the spirit of Paul, where I actually played kind of his rendition of one of his improvisations, Agra. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how this all happened, and he really inspired me because he wanted me to keep the music going, especially for the young people. He said, you know, Gary, you can do anything you want with my music as long as you keep sharing it with the young people and keep the music going, and like he said, you know, it's early, I just spaced out for a minute. He said, let him hear your soul.
Let him hear your soul. So let's hear your soul. We're going to listen to the track Agra from Reflections of the Taj Mahal from Gary Stratsos. A beautiful piece off of the Reflections and the Taj Mahal on the Taj Mahal from Gary Stratsos, who's with us here in the studio. And we left off just with that thought that Paul Horn, was one of your mentors, he said to you, let them hear your soul, right? Let them hear your soul. And I think that's exactly what you do, which is a blessing to everybody. Audience members, Gary, speak of feeling drawn into a trance-like state by the native flute's power to invoke altered states of consciousness. They have spoken that they feel more relaxed, and then they have sometimes visions and time travels and memory regressions and improved states of emotional health or even physical health. Do you think that music has a power to heal us?
Well, that's a, you know, that's a pretty intense thought, and mm-hmm. you can't just answer that real quick, like, but you get older and you start to realize that the music and what Paul used to talk about was that the healing aspects of the music is really the most important direction you want to go. And at least for me, it's mm-hmm. not easy for a lot of musicians and different instruments. It's not easy to evoke that spirit. And I think the solo flute concept, like he was one of the first to use sacred sites as a musical partner or a collaborator. He would use that in place of, say, the jazz ensemble to be able to evoke that message. And I think that I never realized again until you start to take a step back that the healing aspects, whether it's the acoustic Jethro Tull song or a sketch of Paul Horn or something from a jazz melody or a sacred Afro-Cuban Santeria chant or a haunting and plaintive melody from a North American Indian tribe song, a vocal song rearranged on the flute, it's all the same thing. And you start to slow down enough, you start to realize this stuff. So that's what's kind of exciting for me, because, like, again, Abdullah Ibrahim told me, you have a duty to the people. You have a responsibility, and you're in service to the music. And what happens in the music business, you tend to focus on yourself. And when you let go of all that, the real work can start to happen.
Right, right. You said that beautifully, that sometimes we can use sacred sites as a kind of collaborator or something to reflect off of or reflect inside of or resonate with. You also travel to sacred sites and evoke the spirits of the land and allow those impressions to play through you or through the flute. And I also believe that you've performed at the Grand Canyon. Is that true? Did you do a nice little event over there?
Well, I was honored to record in a sacred site there that was built in the 30s called the Desert View Watchtower, which has traditional Hopi Indian art. And the vice chairman of the Hopi Nation, Clark Tenakongva, honored me and sang his sacred songs late at night in there, and we made a film of it and a recording called Unktupwa, Hopi Music and Cultural Connections to the Grand Canyon, because Clark wanted to let people from all over the world have a better understanding of why they're the stewards of the land there and the responsibility that has come to a people, that were chosen to have a hard life, that the Grand Canyon is more than just taking a picture of the canyon, that he wanted people to better understand it. And I think that's a project also like the Taj Mahal that you have, that you should take a look at that project. I think you would appreciate the work that was done there. And after I can give you the website connection to that, but that was a great honor to be able to be there.
Yeah. Do you have the sense as a performer or as a, I don't know, for me as a singer, I guess it's almost like we're channeling at times, right? Certain melodies come through us. Do you have a sense as a performer that the melodies change depending on which land you're standing on?
Yeah, it's a constant. I could play, I have a beautiful Zuni sunrise morning prayer song that I like to play, but I've been playing it for 25 years and it sounds different every time I play it, depending on where I'm at and what cadence it might be. And that's the beauty of being a solo artist, that, you know, it's not a form of entertainment. It's not like playing just the song. It's playing, well, how did you learn Zuni Sunrise and where did it come from and what's the meaning of it? And that's what I think a lot of the young people coming up, that's a tough thing for them still, because it takes time to understand some of this, you know, transformational attitudes, or however you want to put it, where that music, you know, like the Pueblo, like Clark said, oh, when you played the Hopi flute at the 150-year-old house at Walpi, which was amazing, he says the village came alive, because when you started playing that flute, the village came alive. And that's not a tension on yourself. You have to understand that you can't take attention on yourself with any of this.
Right. Correct. Yeah. And I think a lot of people don't realize how ancient the flute is, right? It goes back 34,000 years were the first stories about the flute, and we've kind of lost touch. Yeah.
I mean, think of all the flutes around the world, the ney and the Japanese shakuhachi bamboo flute. I mean, and it just takes a long time, like I said when we first started, to to sound like, it takes a long time to sound like yourself, and you have to be careful that you can only play so much of another person. And you know how jazz is, people get so enamored with that great music that they want to try to emulate it. And when you talk to great jazz people, they'll say, you know, don't try to emulate what we're doing. Listen to it and lift off on your own. But that's not always an easy thing to do.
Right, right. But the flute, what is so... Yeah, what is so special, I think, is the connection. I mean, voice is also like this, our singing voice, but this connection with our breath, that makes it different than a guitar or, you know, the drum. You have your heartbeat, but you have this connection with the breath, which is why there's such a strong soul connection. Many people hear the flute and they say it's really a heart and soul connection.
Exactly.
Do you think we're missing this a little bit. I'm missing people whistling on the street even. I think many people used to get a flute for their, you know, 5th, 6th, 7th birthday, and I'm not sure if that's happening anymore.
No, the world has changed. The information, you know, I was talking to somebody yesterday about, you ought to do a little demo reel of, you know, some of the stuff you're doing, but it should only be probably 30 seconds, a minute. I'm like, really? Oh, yeah, just 30 seconds, you know, just boom, right there, bang, you know, like a movie trailer. Like, you got to have because he's a film guy, you got to have the sizzle. It's got to pop right away. I said, well, maybe not. I mean, who in their right mind would make a solo flute record in 1968, and the guys at Columbia Records told Paul, well, we're not going to put that out. Well, what do you mean? Well, it's got to have some drums. It's got to have some bells on it. We can't just do a solo flute record. He said, well, it's not coming out. So he sits on it for 2 years. Of course, he got the Beatles. He got the Maharaji. He got the yoga, and everything's starting to come in before it was fashionable. Oh, we better put that out. Boom, it sells 1.5 million copies. He creates a whole new career called Inside. And I got a guy telling me how many years later, like 50 plus years, well, you know, 30 seconds, you know, you get just use, that's it. And I said, yeah, but I just did 77 minutes of music, solo flute music to honor Paul Horn. And it's just going to take a certain type of person that would actually sit there and listen, to that whole recording. So, yeah, right. You're right. I mean, you're right. We've lost our way in a lot of ways, at least here in the United States. I want to believe that people in Europe have more of an affinity for listening to music. But, you know, I could be wrong. Maybe you're running it Mach 5.2, just like we are over here.
Well, I think there's a tendency, but I think there's also the opposite is happening, that there are more and more people, right, going in the opposite direction. So we're going to take a little station break, and we're going to be back in a couple of minutes with Gary Strautsos.
Conscious lifestyle to your world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
I'm Kathy Williams, host of Sexy Mom Abundant Life radio show on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. On the show, we explore living abundantly in every area of your life. Ways to let go of limiting patterns and beliefs and to step into the flow of creativity and possibility, knowing you are supported by the universe.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
I am Kara Johnstad. You are at Voice Rising, and I'm in studio today with Gary Strautsus. He is a flute player of the best kind and a wonderful, big-hearted soul here in studio, and also a storyteller. And we just left off with this idea. Do we really have, I guess, the presence and take the time to listen to good stories, to allow ourselves to savor longer melodies? And you were saying that you sense that it's getting a little bit more difficult, right, where you're at, that people want 30 seconds jingles instead of maybe beautiful long songs to deepen their listening practice.
Well, the attention span isn't there, and the stories can accent the opportunity to bring the music forward. If I told you a story about playing at night in the Desert View Watchtower on the south rim of the Grand Canyon with a traditional Hopi singer with his rattle and voice,
right,
I might have an opportunity to keep your attention for a little bit longer by using the story as a way to bring the music forward.
Right. So tell us a little bit more about...
With jazz, they don't say much, right? They just...
Yeah,
you know, and
they just
play. Jazz was the popular music of America in the 50s and early 60s. You know, they didn't say too much. It was just coming off that stage, and that was the story. But
that was the story, and I think, yeah.
That for me, the story... If I didn't tell you the story of Zuni Sunrise, and if I just played it, you would say, well, that's just really pretty and haunting and plaintive, but you wouldn't get the complete picture.
Mm-hmm.
And some people don't want to hear, like Gary, hey, maybe we don't want to hear we don't want to hear the story. We just want you to do a 60-minute minute. I was talking to Parmita from White Swan Records that this record's with, and she said, well, maybe we should just do a 60-minute meditative soundscape thing. You don't say anything. I said, well, that works too, but you don't really get the full picture. But if that's what she wants to do, then we'll just go in and we'll play. But, you know, it's tough. It's tough to, you know, you're giving a lecture, not a lecture, you're using spoken word with the music.
Right. Correct. So tell me a little bit more about the music. We're going to do another track off your album. It's called Prayer. And on this song, you play the Hopi flute. And I was just kind of curious about which, because you also talked about playing the silver flute, but you also are playing different types of flute. So on this track, you're playing the Hopi flute. What quality do the ancient native flutes, especially the Hopi flute, have that draws you into the state of prayer when you're playing?
Well, the Hopi flute hasn't been heard because they were found in the 30s in a cave, and they're dated 1,500 years old. That makes them the oldest wood flutes found in North America, and I have replications of the exact measurements from the museum, and I am bringing that flute back to the Hopi people that has been lost. Except in certain ceremonies, and even I'm not allowed to discuss or even be involved in, they're very, very excited about me bringing back this, what we call it's a rim-blown flute. It's not the Native American flute that you've heard on recordings for the last 40 years. It has nothing to do with the Native flute that you've heard on. This is really the first and the true flute that came from the Southwest Desert. And for me to have that instrument, and I just came back from the Hopi Reservation playing with Clark and doing some fundraisers and concert, they're quite taken by the sound of this instrument. And yes, it brings you right to the cornfields and the cloud formations. And it's like Stuart from the Cultural Preservation Office said, like, the flute knows your intent. You have to bring it back, but it has to benefit Hopi. It belongs at Hopi.
Right. So let's listen in, Gary. Let's listen into this beautiful track from your newest album, The Reflections on the Taj Mahal. It's entitled Prayer. Track Prayer off of Reflections on the Taj Mahal by Gary Strautz, who's with us in studio Gary, your mission is to carry the music forward to future generations and to promote stewardship of diverse cultures and the natural environment. Can you share with us what that vision means to you? We're in changing times, so what drives you in the moment as a musician?
Well, to take a step back, and we talked about the healing aspects and trying to maybe bring some of the young people forward in a good light by maybe not making a record or trying to make a career out of music, but that connection with the natural world. Like me, everything comes from the natural world. I mean, just listening to it, I could never play that again. I don't even know what I was doing there. It kind of actually scared me a little bit. Like, well, what was that? And I would like, you know, to have some young people have maybe a little bit of that same feeling, but maybe not just go down the path that I went.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if someone's interested
because I'm
in
a
learning.
Rare bird, I'm a rare bird because, you know, I everything is in the moment, and I just, it's hard for me to really even, I think I understand, but I'm, you know, like Stuart said from Hopi, the flute knows your intent. You know, I wrote that down.
Right.
I never thought of that before. That never really crossed my mind. It was just like, oh, you're playing the flute. Well, that's pretty. Oh, that's nice. I could hear you. We could go camping by the waterfall and hear you play that flute. Well, yeah, but it's become a, I guess it's a life way without drawing that attention to yourself. If I could go back in time and think about a different direction, I might have not got involved maybe with the recording industry as much as I did trying to bring educational musical content. I would have maybe worked more with the younger people, which I've done. I mean, I've seen thousands mm-hmm. of kids mm-hmm. in the assemblies and just telling the stories. I might have taken a different path, but it's not too late. But I think I might, to be honest with you, and not being disparaging, it was not easy to bring this work. And Paul was the same way. You know, he was very discontent. They just didn't believe in reissuing a lot of his great music 20 years after, you know, the last one. He didn't really play that much. So you look at someone like that was such a gift and such a rare, talk about a rare bird, you're talking about, you know, one of the great improvisers of flute music of our time.
Right.
I'm just a guy that picked up on it and borrowed some of his teaching. So I would never compare myself to the great Paul Horn.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And,
Gary,
and musicians get a little, they get a little full of themselves. You start believing in your own press too much, it can hurt the music. And that's where I've changed because our native people have taught me about that respect. How important the music is to them. It's a cultural loss for them to hear some of that music I play because they don't hear it anymore. And it's not a pleasant position to be in sometimes.
Right, right. So, Gary, how do you come upon these wonderful flutes? Are they designed for you or do you get them as presents? Or if somebody is looking to explore the world of flute, is there an address that they go to? Are there flute makers out there that are sharing their gifts?
I know who makes some of the nicer flutes, and I get a lot of flutes that are gifted to me to record and play with. And mm-hmm. and anybody that is interested, you know, I have certain contacts here in the States where somebody can get what I feel might be a good sounding cedar wood flute from the mm-hmm. Native American tradition, but obviously silver flutes, you know, it's your choice. It's a little different because of all the the big companies, the ones that make the really expensive, you know, foods.
Right.
So yeah, I have contacts for that.
Yeah. So we're getting close to the end of this incredibly beautiful time with you. You are not only a rare bird, you are an early bird. The interview started at 6 a.m. Seattle time, so I really thank you for that, and thank you also for that strong coffee sitting next to you. What is the one thing, I mean, that you would love people to know about music? We brushed a little bit about, you know, music, not the music industry is not necessarily the path, but the music being a path of dedication, of gratitude. What is one thing that you'd love people to know about music from all your experiences?
I think those are good questions, my dear. I think the respect that people need to give to what came from before and how people worked hard. And you know, Dizzy Gillespie told me once, he said, you know, men died for this music, and you have to understand what we went through. I think we take it too lightly sometimes, that the work that's involved and the special gifts that some of these people have given. So if I had to say one thing, it's back to that duty to the music.
Fantastic. Beautiful words, Gary. Thank you so much for being with me today at Voice Rising. For everybody out there, check out his music. Yeah.
And I will send me an email, and we'll come over to Germany and play some music for you.
Ah, I love that. Okay. You have a very blessed day, and let's stay in touch. All right. Goodbye,
bye-bye,
everybody.
Dear. Bye. Bye.